Members of Synod, before we go to item 27, just to make an announcement that there will be a House of Laity Standing Committee at 2:30. You should know who you are if that applies to you. So, Synod, I'd urge you to contain your excitement as we rush headlong to the end of our Synod business, but we have got time for contingency business. And that gives us an opportunity to debate the private member's motion from Gavin Oldham on mission and administration. For this item, you will need GS 2057A and the companion note from the Secretary General, GS 2057B. There was also a financial comment on the sixth notice paper at paragraphs 23 and 24. You may also like to know that there was an amendment from Mary Chapman on the fourth notice paper. You may not have got that with you, but hopefully we will have it projected on the screen for you, and I intend to take that quite early in the debate. But for the moment, I call upon Gavin Oldham to move item 27, and he has up to 10 minutes.
Thank you. Gavin Oldham, Oxford 378. And firstly, my thanks to all those who have supported me in bringing this motion to Synod, those who have signed it, and those who have corresponded and discussed it with me, in some cases in considerable detail, being as concerned as I am to stop the Church wasting time and money, and with many proposals and suggestions for moving it forward. Secondly, I should explain what this motion is not about. It is not about removing proper conversation on everyday issues between parishes, deaneries, and dioceses. It is not about removing decisions, whether about property, legal matters, or anything else, from local resolution when they properly belong there, nor challenging the autonomy and independence of a local church. In the final resort, it will always be up to dioceses and parishes to decide if they want to use a facility provided for them. There will be no central diktat. And it is not about locating still more administrative services in London. Far from it. When we set up support operations, we should look to the most cost-effective and suitable place, not pay London premiums. Now, those who have read my background paper, GS 2057, may wonder why I've taken the unusual step of including a well-known children's story therein. It is true I am a great follower of Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, but the story does show very clearly how our attachment to matters of consequence can blind our eyes to the things that really matter. We are all aware of how children can often state the mind-blowingly obvious truth when we are wholly oblivious to it. Now, clearly, I am no child, but I do see the Church of England smothered in a comfort blanket of duplicated administration, where a huge proportion of our time is spent maintaining its organizational status quo while our congregations fall and the majority of the population see us as not relevant to their lives. It is the modern equivalent of the emperor fiddling while Rome burns. Decentralized organizations up and down the land have overhauled their administrative systems to become efficient, not just commercial businesses, but public sector and voluntary organizations. But with the exception of a number of bilateral diocesan arrangements to share resources, and a small number of church house initiatives, as listed in GS 2057B, we have taken little advantage of the opportunities offered by coordinated process flows and automation. Take, for example, our accounting systems. There is no consistency in our ledger structures or use of accounting software. Each diocese makes its own decisions. So it is not at all easy to construct an integrated financial analysis of the church activities, and separate accounting expertise is required in each diocese. We may be separately incorporated, But that doesn't mean that we can't work on a coherent basis. Likewise, insurance. Can we not do better to negotiate a competitive standard package designed to cover very similar requirements across the country? That is, after all, what an insurance broker serving a large group of companies would do, and we can do so too. Non-clergy payroll is another weight on church administration. We run an excellent clergy payroll system. So why should dioceses have to employ people to do non-clergy payroll? This is surely one of the simplest areas to save time and money. A centralized bank of information for frequently asked questions would save a huge amount of time and money for diocesan support, including registrars, whether for legal matters, boards of education, safeguarding, employment issues, the list goes on. There should be a prerequisite before contacting a local registrar to confirm that you have sought the answer from this web-based FAQ, frequently asked questions, to avoid clocking up legal time and cost. Whether your question is about the timing of your annual parochial church meeting, or whether you're not sure if you need a facility, if you need a faculty for removing pews. These are not questions which should incur cost. But this motion is not about making prescriptive proposals. These are only examples. And I'm sure everyone could contribute more from their own experience. What lies at the heart of a motion is a principle of subsidiarity and the fact that we apply it to everything except liturgy, law, and doctrine. But that is not what subsidiarity means. Let me read out the definition from my background paper. Subsidiarity is the principle that a central governing body will permit its member states, branches, local governments, etc., to have control over those issues that are deemed more appropriate to be decided at local level. The problem is that by applying subsidiarity to matters which are purely administrative, you take away from senior church leaders the incentive to find more efficient ways of working. And it reaches right into this General Synod. When we review finances each summer, we don't see an overview of how financially inefficient the whole church is. We see the Archbishop's Council's budget, and we want to minimize its cost. Then each diocese sees and approves its own budget, but no one oversees church finances as a whole. No one scrutinizes to see if the overall cost of administration is falling year on year. In fact, there is an incentive for the national church institutions to pass out jobs that need doing to the diocese so that they can keep the NCI central cost to a minimum. So jobs that could be done once are duplicated potentially 42 times over. Take, for example, the move to improve charity regulation some years ago. The Charity Commission offered the church the opportunity to provide a single point of coordinated registration, but the church turned the offer down, adopting instead separate parochial registration for every parish with a turnover of more than £100,000. I recall shortly thereafter a conversation with a somewhat incredulous regulator. So if we decide to remove subsidiarity from matters which are purely administrative, we will change the mindset to become more efficient. That's what I would particularly ask you to do. The second part of the motion invites the Archbishop's Council to consult and draw up a plan of some proper analysis. It calls for a step change in progress, not a continuation of the current slow strip feed of initiatives. Those administrative improvements which can release the greatest benefit will be prioritized, and when ready, will be offered to dioceses and parishes for take-up. And we will gradually move the Church of England into the 21st century. And as we do so, time and money will be released. And what will then be our key challenges? It will be to break the mold of cyclical administration and to work progressively to do Christ's work on earth, to help people understand the great message of unconditional love that we carry in our jars of clay. So much of this is already addressed in renewal and reform, but it needs a more progressive approach so that we lift our eyes above the horizon. We are supposed to bring the good news of the gospel to people, not to spend our time chiseling away at administrative problems in front of screens, papers, and in committees. It's time to release that comfort blanket and face the world around us. Thank you.
The matter is now open for debate.
Point of order,
Mr. Archer.
Archer 393, St. Albans. Is the House of Bishops quorate?
Would the House of Bishops please stand? I think we just are. I am delighted to tell you that we are, Mr. Archer. So the matter is now open to debate. But I would like to call upon Mary Chapman to move, speak to and move her amendment at item 28. If you could do that now, please. And hopefully item 28 will come on the screen and you have up to 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Chapman, 463 Archbishop's Council. This amendment is intended to be a friendly one. And its purpose is to reposition the call to action in Clause B to align it more closely with the structures of the Church of England. I think every one of us would share the desire behind Gavin's motion that we should be seeking to be more effective and efficient in administration so as to release the maximum resources to mission. Sharing common services across dioceses ought to lead to cost savings if managed properly. It's not a new notion, and we have a number of examples where the church already works collectively to reduce the overall administrative burden and to save costs. Paper GS 2057B from the Secretary General summarises the current position and gives an indication of what more is being planned. And I commend it to you as a reference document of what is available. For instance, we have central arrangements for collective purchasing of commodities and energy through parish buying, so parishes, cathedrals, dioceses, and church schools can draw on the purchasing power of the whole church. Another example is the successful parish giving scheme, where the Archbishop's Council provided seed corn funding for the expansion of initiative started by Gloucester Diocese, and which is currently processing around £20 million of gift aid claims a year on behalf of 16 dioceses, with a further 14 dioceses expressing interest in joining. The costs of these and many other arrangements are borne by the users of the services, but they are popular because they are demonstrably more cost-efficient than going it alone. So, of course, it makes sense to encourage the development of more such examples. My concern, though, is about the way in which Gavin's motion is worded. In particular, there is a presumption of centralisation, which I don't believe recognises the institutional structure of the church, in which there is, as he has said, a separate legal entity for each parish and each diocese. Dioceses and parishes are not branches of Church of England Inc. or Church of England PLC, and as is implied by the use of the term subsidiarity, so they have not been given the burden of this responsibility for administration. It is legally theirs. Synod can urge and encourage greater encouragement in shared enterprise, but I don't believe it can command it. That does not mean, however, that we should do nothing. The same objectives of lightening the load for people in parishes and dioceses that underpin the simplification programme should drive us to seek administrative efficiencies. There has been an increasingly lively interchange between dioceses and the National Church institutions in recent years, and my amendment proposes that we should further develop that work to identify other areas with potential for a more consistent service offering. And offer is what it would be. At the end of the day, individual dioceses would still have to decide to opt in to any common arrangements that might be developed. It always surprises me that we do not have wider usage of all the services which already exist. But dioceses understand the local context in which their parishes operate in a way that could not be replicated by a central administrative body. Gavin contends that while the current approach has proved to be fruitful in targeted areas, the pace of change is insufficient, and he might well be right. He sets out at clause B an objective of establishing centralised administrative facilities. This prejudges an outcome before an analysis has been done. Whilst welcoming the principle of promoting efficiency and more cost-effective processes, I suggest that the objective should be for the Archbishop's Council to work with dioceses to analyse the real demand and opportunities. We should test each potential service against the two criteria. Does it release resources for local mission, and does it generate economies for the whole church? My amendment seeks to further develop the current approach, which recognises that dioceses and parishes are at the end of the day responsible for their own financial and administrative destiny and can decide to participate or not, depending on their assessment as to the effectiveness of the proposed solutions. I beg to move the amendment in my name.
Thank you. The amendment has been moved, so I invite Gavin Oldham to respond. He has up to 5 minutes.
Thank you. I'm grateful to Mary Chapman for her amendment to the second part of the motion, as it aligns the call to action more closely with the Archbishop's Council's work with the diocese to help the church throughout the country to become more efficient. The removal of the reference to church commissioners is not a concern, as it is the Archbishop's Council's role to lead on this matter, and they will no doubt ask the commissioners for assistance where they see fit. It also removes that potentially difficult word, centralised, from the motion. And that is helpful because, as I have already said, this is not about removing local dialogue and involvement, nor challenging the autonomy and independence of the local church and diocese. But it does recognise the need for action and the purpose of releasing time, energy, and financial resources for local growth and mission. And in doing so, it supports the step change for which I'm looking, a change of mindset which encourages us all to seek out actively areas where we can relieve the administrative burden. For example, following our debate on the preliminaries to marriage, there is huge scope to reduce clergy workload by providing an electronic verification of people coming forward for marriage. In my business, we do tens of thousands of such verifications each year. So I would ask you to support Mary's amendment, and I look forward to the Archbishop's Council taking ownership of this matter as we go forward from this debate. Thank you.
Point of order.
Simon Butler, Southwark 219, as the mover has accepted the amendment, will you accept a motion for closure on the amendment?
I think I'd just like to see whether perhaps someone might want to speak against. But if no one does, then I will accept your motion. So if you would like to speak against, please stand. Okay, well, in which case I'll accept. That has my consent. Does that have your consent, Synod? Please show. Are those against? In which case we will vote on that amendment. So all those in favour of the amendment, please show. Thank you. Those against? That has quite clearly been carried. So now we continue the debate on item 27 as amended by item 28. We'll have Sean Doherty and Carl Fender, please.
Sean Doherty, London 14159. Thank you for calling me chair. Most of the same administrative tasks have to be undertaken in church, no matter whether it is large or small. In my experience, wealthier and or larger churches are more likely to have professionals in their congregation who generously volunteer their time. Many churches now employ a parish administrator or church manager, and one or two even something glamorously entitled a director of operations. Not so in my church. Being in a UPA context, that sort of luxury is much more unusual. And there are, of course, churches in many other types of contexts too, in which that would be a wonderful dream. At the moment, I'm an assistant minister in such a UPA urban priority area church, where there is no minister. So you can do the math as in terms of what that means for my role. This means that the burden of administration, which everyone here will know can be very, very considerable, often falls on the ministers as being the one of the few perhaps professional people in the congregation or even in the community. But ministers, whether lay or ordained, are not recruited on the basis of being suited for such tasks, and they may not be temperamentally suited for them, nor are they necessarily trained for such tasks. Very often people will say to me as a tutor in a theological college, well, you didn't teach me that. This can be the source of very considerable stress for ministers, and as Gavin has so well pointed out in his paper, inhibits mission. Furthermore, mission can only be done locally, although it can, of course, be supported and helped in other ways. I therefore welcome any possible way in which administrative functions can be performed by those who are qualified and gifted to do them, releasing ministers to do what they are called to do and what can only be done locally. So I support and ask you all to support this motion. Thank you.
I apologise to Synod. I meant to call Carl Hughes, and I am calling Carl Hughes now. And after him, the lady there, please. Thank you.
Carl Hughes, Southwark 413. Chairman, thank you for calling me. I'd like to begin by thanking Gavin Oldham for his perseverance in bringing this motion to Synod, and I would very much like to encourage Synod to support this motion as amended. Indeed, why would one not support this motion, which is simply a request to the Archbishop's Council to give further specific consideration to processes which could reduce the overall back-office costs of the Church across the country? We need to recognise that as a body which comprises a multitude of stakeholders and entities across parishes, deaneries, cathedrals, dioceses, mission agencies, the NCIs, the Church of England is not best known for its ability to consider, embrace and implement change with haste. Indeed, perhaps the debate earlier today in terms of setting God's people free indicate the time that it takes to get to a particular point. There's also an enormous and, in my view, generally unmerited suspicion of any organisational change across the church, particularly if that change could in any sense be characterised as centralisation. This having been said, I would not wish to belittle in any sense the considerable and valuable progress which Mary Chapman has just referred to, which has been taken in simplifying and streamlining a number of activities across the church, and clearly those items are listed in the Secretary General's paper GS 2057B. And in addition, there are also in several dioceses excellent initiatives that have begun to work collaboratively to share resources in the provision of services. However, there must be a point for each of us when we reflect on the fact that we have 20,000 ordained clergy across 16,000 churches, 12,500 parishes in 42 dioceses with 42 cathedrals, that there must be myriads of ways in which we could be more effective and efficient in managing and delivering the boring but critical back office support services which we require, particularly in the areas of HR, legal, finance, audit, insurance, property and investment management, and IT. Now, I appreciate that I run the risk of being labelled as another corporate management type who's challenging how the church has thought and operated for several centuries. However, I'm proud to admit that that is my challenge to this synod. On the basis of my professional business experience, I can confidently state that it is inconceivable that the church's operations cannot become more efficient and cost-effective given the current construct. I'd also remind Synod that as Christians, we have a duty of stewardship to ensure that all the resources provided for the mission and working of the church are used to optimal effect. There are many large, multifaceted organisations in the UK which have reinvented themselves and the nature of their operations to become more efficient in the use of technology in a digital age, and more effective by using common services to reduce cost and improve service delivery. So is it thus really beyond the pale to ask whether a national shared service centre for the church located outside London could deal with all HR queries from parishes or dioceses or manage a national payroll system? And let us remember that by bringing services together, we have the opportunity to ensure that the best of current practices are identified and then delivered for the benefit of all. Now, as I speak, I can already hear the naysayers whispering in my ear that none of this is possible because of the separate legal status of parishes and dioceses, or because it'll be impossible to get enough people on board. My challenge to such views, to the dioceses, and particularly to the Archbishop's Council, is this. Be willing to think broadly, radically, and as Sir Andreas encouraged us earlier this week, innovatively. Secondly, be willing to consider removing barriers to change rather than acquiescing to the status quo. Thirdly, be willing to embrace the words of our Lord in St. Matthew's Gospel. With men, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible. I support the motion.
I'm going to impose a speech limit now of 3 minutes. After Julie Ziegel, anyone standing wants to speak against? Then you, madam. Thank you.
Julie Ziegel, Oxford 377. As a parish and a deanery treasurer, I do a lot of administration. I also have wonderful people who do further admin to help me. And I believe that the work in the middle of our spreadsheets and our figures and our paper is my ministry. It's what I'm called to do. Now, had the motion remained unamended, I would have, in fact, have been opposing it. I didn't think that centralising, almost for the sake of centralising, was the right thing to do. However, this amended motion really ticks my boxes. What we need to do is continue what we're doing at the moment. We're getting things to the right level. The administration needs to be done at the right level of church. Not at the top or at the bottom, if that's not where it's supposed to be. My present feeling is that things aren't actually that far wrong. I'm delighted, however, by things like the parish buying initiative, which gives access to people in my parish and my deanery and the parishes in my deanery the power of the large organisation of which we are part. It's used and recommended and used again over and over in my area. Dioceses do need to deal with the local. They need to be there as the local point of contact. we need local knowledge, and we need local relationships. However, it's really good to identify opportunities to offer centralised functions. And I hope, as this motion states, there will be work done with the diocese, questions asked to find out what they would like help with, and also possibly that could be extended, I'm not going to add another amendment, to asking the parishes what work they might like help with. It would be unwise to centralise a function that nobody actually wants centralised. So I think those questions need asking. I think this motion will result in more of the same good stuff that we're seeing already, so that we who delight in our administration, and probably those who don't enjoy it so much, can take joy in using it. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Robert Shaw, 217 Sheffield. Speak as a parish priest with five churches in a rural context, and I wasn't intending to speak, so I haven't prepared anything, but looking at this motion, it actually doesn't prepare or propose anything that's going to make my life any easier. We're talking about national and diocesan level. This motion isn't going to fill in anything to do with bans. This isn't going to fill in the baptism certificates for me on a Sunday. This motion isn't going to do anything to make me released for mission in the church anymore. In our diocese, our central services were reviewed, and a number of people's jobs were put under threat. It was a really unpleasant time in our diocese and not something that I would like to see repeated. What I see in this motion is a danger of things happening more nationally and local people in diocesan offices being made redundant. Fair enough if it's natural wastage, but if it's not, then that's something as Christians I don't think we should be putting people under pressure for. Thank you.
So I call upon Stephen Linus, and after him I would welcome a motion for the closure.
Stephen Linus, Bath and Wells, number 60, no pressure then. I want to speak against this motion, partly because of the very vagueness of what's intended, even though it's greatly improved by the amendment. But I also want us to think a bit more carefully about the nature of dioceses and the nature of the national church, and indeed, as we've just heard, the nature of parish life. Geography is a rather exciting subject to some of us, because what works in some places as interdiocesan cooperation will not work in others. As I understand it, for example, Leicester and Coventry have a history of cooperation in all sorts of ways. The Bath and Wells Diocese, some 10 years ago, investigated quite heavily in sharing our education department with that of Bristol. But that proposal fell, partly because different education authorities with which we were involved made it very difficult to see how it could work. My word, things have changed a bit since then, of course. And then there is Yorkshire. The West Yorkshire Diocese is maybe a warning from history. Not that what's happened there hasn't worked now, but as I understand it, and I heard a wonderful presentation about the processes that went through to form the present diocese, that was blooming difficult, and it took a lot of work to do. Because what this motion doesn't notice is that a lot of what we do as dioceses is about relationships. Clergy and church wardens get to know the key staff in a diocesan office, and they trust them, and they're happy to ring them up with those odd queries. It's not the same as an FAQ on a website. It's not the same as ringing up somebody in a national office with an HR question. For many people in the Diocese of Bath and Wells, Wells is far enough away for them to think about them at Wells don't understand me when I ring them up with a question. I hesitate to think what it would be like if we had some anonymous church finance, back office, property, HR office 200 miles away with whom we had no relationship. I shudder slightly at the talk of value for money and stakeholders if it means that we set up a cheap office which might be perhaps in, not in London, but in Middlesbrough or Falmouth, where offices might be cheap. That is a long way away from most of us, and there'd be no relationship. And finally, if we struggle to get people sometimes to pay the parish share, and I speak from a diocese which gets something like 98% collection rate, how much more difficult will it be to collect parish share if people think, I know it's not quite like that, if they think that even more of our money is going to the national church than happens at the moment? I'm having a house clearance at the moment, and one of the things I found is a USB fridge that somebody bought as a present. And they thought it was
a great idea. Could you come to a close, please?
I'm going to chuck the fridge out, and I think we should chuck this motion out. Thank you.
Point of order, Mr. Freeman. That has my consent. Does that have the consent of Synod? All those in favour? Any against? Thank you. That is quite clearly carried. So I now call on Gavin Oldham to respond to the debate. You have up to 5 minutes.
Thanks very much. Well, thank you for all your contributions to the debate, and particular thanks to Mary Chapman, not only for her amendment, but also for the time and energy she's taken to find a way in which the Archbishop's Council can take ownership of the motion going forward. Now, I'm conscious that I'm the only thing standing in the way of drawing a line under this synod and going home, so I will be quick. Sean Doherty and Carl Hughes, Julie Siegel, thank you very much for your remarks on that. Sean, talking about the burden of administration on ministers' shoulders. And actually, that's in a way, partly the speaker who spoke from Sheffield, about how is it going to help at the parish level. I very much hope this will work right through, as I indicated with the preliminaries to marriage comment that I made earlier. Carl Hughes referred to the way that the Church of England is not known for embracing change and encouraging us to remove barriers to change. I think that is absolutely so true. We do actually have to move forward now. So we've had a couple of points against here. And Stephen Linus also spoke against the motion. But I really would like to assure him that it will always be a diocese choice. It will always be the parish choice as to whether they want to use facilities which are put forward for them. As I said right at the beginning, there's no central diktat envisaged here. So you can keep all those relationships in place if you want them at that level. And indeed, you know, there will be a need to maintain those relationships going on about all the support services which are provided. Now, finally, thanks to William Nye for his thoughtful paper, GS2057B, in response to my motion, setting out the various initiatives which have been taken to date. For me, this journey to help the church to become more efficient and become more focused on mission started 15 years ago. When I first joined the General Synod in 1995, yes, it was that long ago, one of the key issues was a report called Working as One Body, which resulted in the formation of the Archbishop's Council and the reorganization of the national church institutions. Now we have the opportunity to help the church throughout the country refocus on mission by removing the comfort blanket of administration. In that same spirit of working as one body, I urge you to take that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gavin. So now I put item 27 as amended by item 28 to the vote. All those in favour, please show. All those against? That's been clearly carried. Thank you very much. That concludes this item of business.